Okay. As everybody probably knows by this point, that we've been doing workshops with various topics, topics that we felt were important for early in sobriety, but might not necessarily be topics that you would hear at other meetings. We've had many topics on relationships, personal programs, religion, things like that. So tonight we are honored with two people that are going to share their experience with working in the treatment facility career, treatment facilities, or the treatment, what would I call it, treatment career, and their own personal personal recovery programs. So I'm going to turn the meeting over to Mike.
Hi, everybody. Mike, alcoholic.
I'll give you a brief history here.
I come from Las Vegas, Nevada. I was born and raised out there. And I guess it was late 70s, early 80s. I was a baccarat dealer for the Las Vegas Hilton out there. And it was the cocaine epidemic when everybody was doing cocaine and they didn't think it was addicting. And I was already pretty alcoholic and doing tons and tons of coke. All my tips were going to that. And I heard of this Dr. Gold. I saw a People magazine with Dr. Gold and Mackenzie Phillips on the front. And it was the first time they talked about treatment for cocaine addiction. And I'd been through a couple different treatment centers out west. And really, that's how I ended up coming to New Jersey. I got to tell you about one of the treatments I first went to, though. It was the first place I ever went to treatment. It was called Schick-Schedel, and it was in Seattle, Washington. And I'd gone to my dad. I was 21, and I had a reputation as a drinker, and all my buddies were like, you know, when you get into the gaming business, you're going to have to give up the drinking and the drugs and get sober. And I tried that, and I think I lasted like 4 days. So I went to my dad, and he sent me off to a treatment center in Seattle that my aunt had gone to, and it was aversion therapy. And really what the treatment is, they detox you with booze, which I thought was great. I remember on the airplane down there, I went to the back where the stewardess was, and they had a little cart with all the little bottles in it, and I gave her $20. I says, listen, lady, I'm going to rehab. Could you just open this door? And she did. I drank my whole way down there. But what it was they sat you in this chair, and you had a big pan in front of you and a mirror, and there's a little room with shelves all around with every kind of booze you could imagine, and they give you a shot that makes you just deathly sick to your stomach. And then you drink two warm glasses of salt water, and they let you drink whatever booze you want. And as soon as it goes down, it comes back up. So you're watching yourself throw up in this dentist chair, and you learn to associate nausea with drinking. And then they lead you back to your room. You could barely walk, and this shot made my eyes all weird. And they give you a little plastic bucket, and came in with a drink with about that much warm beer in it. They called it a butterfly, and it was something that just made your stomach so sour. And you sat there and just was sick all day. And to pass the time, the nurse brought in a AA speaker tape for me to listen to. Maybe that's why I get nauseous at speaker meetings. So they did that for one day, and then the next day they give you a pentothal treatment. The shrink comes in, and they run sodium pentothal in you on a roller valve and ask you all these questions. It's supposed to be like truth serum. You know, what was the worst thing you ever did? Why do you think you drank? So it was a Duffy treatment and then a pentothal treatment, and it was one of each for 10 days, and off you go. I went back to work as a baccarat dealer, and I remember the first day back to work, a guy ordered a bourbon right next to me. I almost threw up on the guy. It was so powerful. It was really powerful. When I look back on it now, I don't know why I thought that treatment would work. I drank and puked for years. It didn't cure me of it. But it did. I couldn't drink after that. And But I just switched addictions. It was more with the cocaine and stuff and the Quaaludes. And one night I was taking pills and finally choked down a beer, and it was like it just erased everything. So finally ended up getting fired as a Baccarat dealer and came out here to New Jersey and went to Fair Oaks Hospital. It was back in 1981. And spent 3.5 months there for my cocaine abuse and my alcoholism. And the day I left, I drank. And I guess I figured I had enough therapy that I could drink like a normal person, and cocaine was probably the only problem. And shortly after, I think it took 3.5 months before I ended up back in Fair Oaks again. And that time I got sober. And they recommended that I stay out of the gaming business for at least a year. They didn't want me anywhere near Las Vegas. So that's what I did. And went to AA, and after a year, I had met so many friends in the area, I didn't want to go back to Las Vegas. So now it was, what am I going to do? And Fair Oaks Hospital started hiring people that were recovering people, and I ended up taking a job working on the drug unit there, and went back to school, and eventually got my license to counsel. I ended up working for Fair Oaks Hospital for, I think it was about 10 years. And then started a private practice on my own. As you can tell, there's a lot of relapse in my story. What happened was, when I did first get sober, which was in 81, you know, when I look back on it, I probably should have been out of the counseling for longer than I was. I was only sober about a year when I went into the field, but it was wonderful, and it was what I needed. I mean, the only thing I knew was gambling and drugs and alcohol, so it made sense to go into being a counselor. The first 10 years were great. I think most of my support came from the staff I worked with and going to AA meetings all over the place. But I remember it was about, actually I think it was my 10th year anniversary. I noticed I wasn't nearly as connected to AA that I had been. And I think part of the mindset that counselors get into is when you're working and walking and talking recovery all day long, the last thing you want to do is go to a meeting when you get off. And I kind of rationalized it as, well, I'm around this recovery thing all the time, you know, what's the big deal? But I remember 10 years celebrating it down at Florham Park and not feeling real connected. And I knew something wasn't right. I didn't really think it was a relapse coming on. I just thought I was getting depressed. I had a history of depression. I had been on antidepressant meds for years. And what I noticed was when I did go to meetings, from being in the field for so long, I always saw patients at meetings, and I had this idea that since I'm a counselor, I can't raise my hand and say I'm having a problem. It's not fair to clients that are there, which now I look back on it, I can see that was all ego, but it really kept me from asking for help in the room. So I would always run into patients somewhere. So I decided I would get myself a therapist and do some therapy. Maybe I needed to do some more family of origin work. Maybe that's what was making me feel depressed, the whole bit. Spent 3 years in therapy and ended up relapsing anyway. Now that I look back on it, I mean, therapy's great, but it's not treatment for my alcoholism. And it's tough, I believe, for counselors because you're wearing two hats. It's tough to go to regular meetings. I know we tried meetings of just counselors around, which never really seemed to work. We'd always end up talking shop, but it was difficult. So I ended up going back into treatment where I found out, I went to Father Martin's. What had happened was, by now it's, 1993, and I started my own place in Morristown, and I was 13 years sober, and I was so anxious. It's a new business. I'm throwing all this money at it. And I went and had eye surgery done. It was before they did the laser. They did the radial keratotomy where they cut your eye like a pizza pie. And I didn't bother telling the doctor had it done out in Las Vegas. I didn't tell him I was recovering. I was like, you know, I'm a counselor. It's been 13 years. Plus, I was scared they weren't going to give me any pain medication. And they gave me 20 milligrams of Valium and two little Demerol pills, I remember, to take me home. And they patched both eyes. My wife led me back up to the hotel room. And I took the one Demerol pill, and I waited a good 4 to 6 minutes and took the other one. And it came right back. You know, my back didn't hurt anymore. I wasn't feeling anxious. And it woke that sleeping giant. And immediately the shame set in. I came back to New Jersey, and I told no one. Tried to get back to my meetings, continued to run my outpatient business, and didn't let anybody know. And it got progressively worse from there. It broke the boundary. I remember catching a cold and getting cough syrup from the doctor with codeine and taking that. And then I hurt my back and had a doctor prescribe me Vicodin. And in 3 months' time, I was hitting up just about every doctor in the tri-state area for these Vicodin. And really kind of rationalize it. Well, you know, at least I'm not drinking. But I had just switched addictions. As a healthcare professional, and especially being a counselor who's recovering, I felt like I couldn't ask for help. If I told somebody what was going on, I was going to lose my license. And that was how I was making a living. So I tried to sneak away to treatment to Father Martin's for 3 months. And, of course, my staff knew what was going on, and I couldn't put any time together. I'd last 3 months, 4.5 months, and it was back out again. And one day I was strung out on these Vicodin, and I went to one of those little dock-in-the-boxes to get some more. And it must have been flu season because the place was just packed. And I was in withdrawal, and I'm like, I can't wait here. I can't wait to do this. And I got the bright idea, being the smart counselor that I was, that if I went down to the Hollow, I could get a bag of heroin, which is the same thing. It'd take away the withdrawal. And I talked myself into, I'll do one bag of heroin, detox myself off the Vicodin, and I'll be fine. That didn't work out too well. Caught a heroin habit. Still going to work, still doing assessments, running an aftercare group. You talk about feeling guilty. And working in a rehab is not a real good place to try and hide your addiction. One of the counselors I worked with knew what was going on. And he called my wife one night, and they planned an intervention. And a couple buddies came over, told me I was going out to dinner, and we went down to the Hilton, and they took me down to one of the lower levels where the boardrooms were, and I thought that was kind of strange. And I opened the door, and there's my mom and my dad and some people from staff, and my first thought, this was denial I was in, it must be a surprise birthday party. But nobody was smiling, and nobody was saying surprise. And I saw an aftercare counselor, and I go, oh boy, here we go. And it probably saved my life, but boy, was I pissed. Felt like I'd been bushwhacked. Went off to treatment and could not stay sober. By now, people in the field are knowing, because I've been around in the field, and it's a small community. And I ended up taking a position just as owner-operator of my own rehab. I really couldn't be doing ethically any clinical work. I was having trouble myself staying sober. And treatment was not working. I don't know if it was just maybe being desensitized from being around treatment so much, but I'd go into treatment, and it seemed like I was more focused on what they were trying to do with everyone than me getting better. So in and out of a couple different rehabs, and eventually put myself in Alena Lodge, if anybody's ever heard of Alena Lodge, for the reluctant to recover. being a counselor in the field, I knew what that was like, and that was the last place I wanted to go. But I went, and I spent 1 year and 2 days there. Long, long time. Didn't speak to my kids for 10 and a half months. You can't use a phone. Nothing. I remember being so humiliated one night. They had a speaker come in, and it was one of my prior patients. And I wanted to crawl under the table. That's how much shame I had from just from this disease. It's tough. I'd like to say that I stayed sober from there, but I didn't. I was sober maybe 2 years and had a skydiving accident, broke my leg in three places, and went to the ER saying, I'm a recovering addict. I can't have any narcotics. And the guy's like, today you're not. Boom, hit me with the morphine, and I was in the hospital for a week on a morphine pump, which was great. I thought that was the best thing. It's like, I got to do this. But I knew I was in trouble, and I was calling my counselor before I even got out and put myself right back into rehab. I think probably the most important thing I've learned from being a counselor is I'm really good at helping other people. I'm not so good at helping myself, and it's really tough for me even today to reach out and ask for help. I'm only sober 4 months now, again this time around, and I still got a lot of the shame and the guilt of relapse after relapse. The other big thing I've learned is intellect has not been enough to keep me sober. The self-knowledge of knowing myself, and I've had counselors tell me this, I know myself inside out, that is not enough. That's just not it. It's the spiritual piece that's been difficult for me to work. It's really where I've been trying to do most of my work today. The other tough thing about being in the field, too, is you see a whole lot more failures and successes, and it's crisis-oriented treatment, and it is. It's hard to keep the focus on yourself. You're used to giving everybody else answers. You're the answer guy. So to have to turn that around and go out into the community, into your own meetings, and ask for help was just really, really hard for me. At Alena Lodge, they came to me and they said, you need to sell your business. We want you to become a newcomer. And at that point, I was so beaten down. It was like, yes, I'll get rid of it. And it was a load of pressure off of me. I could go back to meetings and be a newcomer. I didn't have to be Mike, this counselor who's been around for such and such a period of time. I've had offers to go back into the field now. I think it's too early. I don't think... I'm scared. I don't know if that's something that I want to get back into or not right now. Right now, it's going through the work in the big book and just finished writing out my amends with my sponsor and just trying it again, back to basics. It's been real simple. That's exactly where I'm at with it right now. That's 8:30 exactly. I'm going to give it over to Gary. Thank you. Wow, I couldn't have timed that anymore. Okay, half an hour-ish. I can go for two if you want me to. Hi, I'm Gary. I'm an alcoholic. It's really good to see Mike. We know each other going back many years. I, too, am in the healthcare profession. My story is a little bit different in that I'm relatively new to it. When I say relatively new, I'm going to sort of skip over all the life dysfunctional stuff, but trust me, I was like sideways until I was about 32 and finally came into the program, and I came into the program with all my stuff. In 1986, actually, I came into the program in July of 1986 and went through, you know, it's been a little over 21 years now of going to all these meetings and being involved with different things and really
going. I've been very fortunate that I got the program the first time, and I've watched a lot of relapse, and I've watched so many hundreds and thousands of people come in and out of the rooms over the years. And one of the things that I noticed, well, first of all, I learned a lot from watching relapses happen, because when I was new, all the old timers would say, that's got to happen so you can, you don't have to go out and do it yourself, kind of thing. And I always thought that seems a little selfish, but the fact is, to a degree, it is pretty much a selfish program. Can be. Actually should be, to a degree. We do need to watch our own ass. That's really important, because we're not really much good to other people if we don't watch it and we end up back out again. You know, if we got families and kids and wives and husbands and all that stuff. But so I over the, started the process of recovery back then. And as I grew in the program and I learned more about what's going on with me, because it came to me relatively quickly, mostly because people told me, because I'm not that smart about this stuff. But I learned, I'm a good student, and a lot of people that really knew a lot about this stuff, I was lucky to hook up with early on. But one of the things I learned is that we have to be teachable, and that the not using piece is really, that abstinence piece is really sort of fundamental and is required, in my opinion, for a successful recovery program. But it's just the beginning. If I look at 21 years of recovery, the first 9 months to a year was about not drinking. Drugs weren't, I did a lot of drugs experimentally when I was in college and stuff, but drugs really weren't my thing. I was really a drinker and had a little stint with cocaine, but I really didn't, it wasn't my thing. Where was I? Anyway, I was learning that the first year or slightly less was about not using, and the last 20 years of this stretch has been learning about who does Gary want to be, what does he need to do to change. You know, I understand where I've been, and I understand the very selfish, self-centered approach I took to life. I was very fortunate as a kid. Fortunate. I guess it was part of what contributed to it. But I mean, I was a fair amount of privilege when I was a kid. I didn't want for a lot of things. The family life was pretty fucked up, but the things I had. But I realized that, if I'm really going to change and I really am going to start feeling less anxious, I was one of those people that was the life of every party. But if you brought me occasionally to a room with 300 people in it, I would feel like I was the only one in the room. I just wasn't comfortable with it. I just couldn't get comfortable. And everybody looked at me like, and I would even say that occasionally to a good friend, and they'd look at me like, you, of all people, you're like the leader. You're the guy at the front of the conga line. You're the guy dancing naked on the table in the bar. How can you not feel, well, that helps me not focus on the fact that I'm alone in the room. So I knew I had a lot of stuff that needed to change, and so I went about that, and I started asking myself things like, and I find myself like, I did some of my best thinking in the showers in the morning, or shaving, and I was thinking one morning, and I just had this conversation with someone today, actually. I said, do I think that God really put me on earth to be fundamentally happy, and that we're supposed to look for or try to learn to build skills to avoid the negative stuff, or are we here to be fundamentally unhappy and that we have to go searching for those positive things in our life, the happiness? And I kind of came to the conclusion, and I have no idea why I thought of this stuff, but I thought about it. I said, it would probably be helpful if I made, like I took a position, if I decided what it is that I believe, and then kind of use that as sort of a foundation or a guide of sorts, if I can remember more than an hour to do it. So I chose that I believe that God put me on earth to be fundamentally happy, and that I'm going to be faced with challenges, and the more time I spend learning how to build the skills to deal with those challenges, the better off I'm going to be. Nobody can prove me wrong, and nobody can prove me right. So it's just kind of what I chose to believe. And that has been that way for me for a long time. So I go through all these changes, and I'm learning lessons like that. And most of them came from people that are really smart and had you know, not when I say successful programs that I met along the journey and continue to know and become good friends with, you know, these people had what I wanted. But I also learned as I went along in the program. Meanwhile, by the way, I'm, you know, CPA, stockbroker, financial guy, corporate guy, business guy along the way. And I started realizing after a while that, you know, there's an awful lot going on in AA. I sponsor a bunch of people. I have a sponsor, my sponsor I've had for about 20 years now. What's going on with all this stuff with people? I mean, I had my share of it, but at least to the best of my knowledge, mine was situational depression and anxiety. I mean, my ass was on fire. Why would I not be anxious and depressed? I mean, there was nothing right about my life when I came in. My wife wanted to fire me. My boss wanted to fire me. I wanted to fire me. I mean, I was a mess. And I thought, what's up with all this other stuff that's going on? You know, people come in and they're depressed. Some of them within a year or two seem to be through that. You know, their life starts to come back together pretty well. Some people I know in the program 15 years are still depressed. You know, they're still anxious or they're still bipolar. I mean, I didn't know even what the... I mean, I knew, but I didn't really understand it that well. So after... I forget, let's see now, maybe, what am I, 21, 16, 15 years in the program, I decided, you know what, this financial stuff has been pretty good to my wife and I, because we were both sort of in the business world. I said, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to figure out what I want to do, and it's not going to be business. So I don't know if I want to be maybe an alcohol counselor, or since I'm a financial guy, maybe I'll get involved in the not-for-profit world because I've been all about profit my whole career. Maybe I'll be trying to look for a CFO of a, you know, a not-for-profit organization, try to give back a little. So I have no idea what I want to do. And so I got some advice from some friends and some people that were in the not-profit world. And long story short, I got some really good advice from a guy who said, and by the way, I had made one more decision. My whole life to that point had been all about putting my best face forward. You know how we all are looking for those jobs? We want the resume to be all primped up, and we want, you know, I want to wear my best suit, you know, and I want to have, you know, I want to, like, make sure I got my best, whatever that is. I realized after a while there really wasn't one, which was fine. But I said, I'm just going to be me. You know, I'm learning all this really cool stuff in AA. I've got 15 or 16 years of this stuff under my belt. I'm just going to be me. So the first thing I would say to people, I went in and talked to them about getting networking advice, career-type ideas and input. They say, so tell me a little bit about yourself. Well, you know, my name's Gary, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm in recovery X amount. You know, I've been in recovery for a while, and, you know, I've done this business thing. And I told them, really, that's really who I am. And that's, quite frankly, why I'm looking at making this change. But I don't have a clue what I want to do. And this person said, let me introduce you to a whole bunch of people I know. One of them, there were five of them. He even gave me a whole write-up on their bios. They were heads of rehabs. They were clinical directors of rehabs. They were, and one of them was an educator, a clinical psychologist, professor at a local graduate school. And I saved her for last. And long story short, I said, look, I've had these four or five meetings with these people. These people love me. They're offering me jobs as a counselor, entry level. I don't care about the money. They're offering me seats on their board. I mean, I'm getting all this cool stuff. This is amazing. But she's a friend of mine now. She's this crusty old clinical psychologist who said to me, well, you know, Gary, you're going about it all wrong. And I said, really? She said, yes, you're going about it all wrong. I said, why do you say that? I said, look, of all the stuff that's going on. She said, you're going to get in at a ground level with your background in business. You're going to see how a lot of these places are run, which isn't, a lot of them not that great. You're going to want to change things. You have no credentials. You have no background. You're not going to be empowered to do anything. And you're going to be out of the business in 6 months to a year. And I couldn't argue with that. So she said, you ought to go to school. You ought to get a degree, at least a master's. And depending on where you want to go, do the rest of the stuff. So that's how at 47, I basically, or 48, whatever I was, kind of retired from the business world because I was fortunate enough to be in a position to do that. And I decided to go to graduate school full-time, year-round, to get it done. And the net of it is now I'm, and by the way, not trained in alcohol and drug abuse. That's a piece that was part of what I did, but I got trained as what's called a licensed professional counselor, an LPC, which means I'm a psychotherapist. So I deal with mental health issues as well as addiction issues, and I happen to specialize in both, people that have what they call co-occurring disorders, which is both mental health and addiction issues. That's a long-winded story, I know, to get you to how kind of what I do. But it was important, I think, that I just kind of morphed into this somehow. And not somehow, I morphed into it the way I just explained. But that process of being in AA all this time and watching people get better and being part of it as a sponsor and being sponsored and the whole process of watching this whole miracle of the program happen, I said, man, this is far more fun than I'm having as a business guy. So I've gone through the education. I'm getting more and more. This is adding a whole new dimension, by the way, to my recovery. Part of which was a bunch of my friends who've been around a long time saying, you know, Gary, the highest rate of relapse in pretty much any population is those in the business. And I said, yeah, I know. And they were friends from the program, and Chris being one of them. Sometimes we wonder who sponsors who, don't we? I was aware that I had to pay attention to that because it's true. For all the reasons Mike mentioned, for all that whole, I deal with it all day long, so why do I need to go to meetings? And that kind of misses the point. So I do try to go to meetings. I do deal with it all day long, but I'm not a rehab. I mean, I don't do that. That's not just what I do, although I do deal with addiction. And so I try to stay vigilant about that. I'm not going to lie to you. In my world of therapy, I work a lot of nights. So I just actually finished up before I got here at 8 o'clock. And that's most nights I work till late at 9 o'clock. And that's great. I mean, it's so different than my old world. Nobody is happier or more grateful than I am. Anyone that I get to help in my world is better than any trade I did on Wall Street, any accounting financial transaction I ever did. It so far exceeds that. The people are different in the industry. The whole world is different. My day is so different than it used to be. And I get to be my own boss, which is really cool. Sometimes. But I do need to be aware of that for all the reasons that Mike mentioned, and that you do get looking at the stuff that you do all day long. Maybe I don't look at it like I take advantage or take it for granted that I'm working in it all day, so I've never done that because I was told not to do it. I was told to be aware of it. So I am. So after 21 years for me, I going to one or two meetings a week is what I do. But I'm also like the happiest, grateful alcoholic you've ever met. I swear to you I am. I am so grateful for the life that I have, both with my wife, the one that threw me out, by the way, 21 years ago. We just celebrated 30 years a month and a half ago of marriage. It's never been better, and it gets better every year. I know that's this program. There is no way that I would have the life that I have without a solid recovery program. So my whole life has just changed so much since I came in here, including my career. I run into all these people. Well, let me go back to the piece that I was talking about before, because I've spoken to this group before. I think, Chris, it was about meds. We talked about meds and depression and sort of how that, at least my opinion of how that can play into the world of recovery. I could go off on that tangent again, and I'm not going to do that because I feel very passionate about that. I can't help myself, but quite frankly, think drugs like antidepressants these days are not Valium. They're not addictive drugs. They don't get you high. I'm not saying they're perfect, and I'm not a proponent for meds, but I'm not anti-meds either. I'm the same way about meds as I am about therapy. If it works, do it. Okay? in a very carefully prescribed situation, hopefully with a good doctor that prescribes them. But sometimes the people that come to me for therapy are not in a position to receive that therapy if they're... Taking a pill is not going to change their attitudes. Excuse me. Taking a pill is not going to change their life. Taking an antidepressant, if you are in fact clinically depressed with the disease of depression, it can put them in a frame of mind to receive the therapy better. That's why I think meds are sometimes appropriate. They're not right for everybody. Therapy's not right for everybody. And that's all I'm going to say about meds. But this idea that they're all bad and you slip if you take a Prozac, that is bullshit. It is. And I understand I'm going to piss people off here. Sorry. But I just don't believe that taking a drug like that is relapsing. I just don't. So, now that I've pissed off half the room, I was watching these people in the program for all these years come in with all kinds of issues, OCD issues, bipolar issues, depression, anxiety, to the point where they're sideways with it. I mean, and they're getting sober, and they're still sideways. Their life is still unmanageable, even though they're not using alcohol and drugs anymore. And they may be living the steps. They may be breathing and dreaming about steps. They may be doing the work, but they're still having problems with life. And AA was never intended to deal with clinical issues. So I thought, what am I going to do about that? I mean, I'd like to be more help in that area. I'm not going to go there without knowing what I'm doing. So maybe I ought to just go back and actually get trained and educated and experience and internships and all the stuff you need to do to get licensed to do it. So I that's probably why I like my job. So I can't back up. I got this thing here. That's why I like my job so much, because I really do think I understand what people go through to be depressed and be a recovering alcoholic. Granted, my depression, as far as I can tell, was situational. I don't believe I was good, but that doesn't matter. Depression is depression, and when we get sideways, it's all about doing life. There is no right or wrong. It's only about what works. You know? And if the way we're doing life isn't working, then we need to change it. And that's basically what I do as a therapist. Where have you been? Where are you now? And what would it look like if it were better? And how do we get from here to there? That's really what therapy is. Really. Now, there's a clinical approach and there's, you know, treatment programs and all that stuff that are really important. But that's basically what it is. At least that's the way I do it. And the way I think it's important for us as recovering people is that sometimes it's more than just the alcohol. For me, it was, for a period of time, anxious. I mean, I've been amped since I was about 3. It's just part of it is who I am. It might be anxiety, whatever. You know? But it's not unmanageable. My life is not unmanageable at the level that I stay amped now, or I exist at amped, because it's just who I am. And I feel comfortable that I can control it. So I think taking all of those things into consideration when we're in recovery is very important, because sometimes it's hard to find what they used to call the good old-fashioned drunk with take him off his alcohol and everything's fine. You know, it's a different world that we live in. There's other pressures that we're involved in. There were pressures in the old days too, but as a treatment professional, I have to be aware that I am susceptible to all the same stuff. I can get sideways in my life just as easy as anybody else can. The fact, like Mike said, I'm good at helping other people, but I'm not so good at helping myself. Any one of us could get, you know, caught in that trap. Really, it's easy to look at other people and say, you know, you ought to do that, or have you ever thought about doing that? In my experience, this works. You know, meanwhile, our marriage sucks. Our family is sideways. You just have to. I'm a recovering alcoholic. That's what I am. I may be a therapist. I may be a CPA. I may be a husband. I'm a son. But I am a drunk, and that's what I am. And I just find that it's really helpful for me to never, ever forget that. Why would I want to forget it? I mean, the recovery process has completely changed my life. For a guy who really was against all this hand-holding, Lord's Prayer-saying bullshit when I first came in, I was not real good on it with that. I understand you guys have, you know, a way. But, I'm a little different, you know. I don't need all that happy, happy, joy, joy stuff. Just tell me how I get through each day, and I'll be fine with that. Recovery is just not about that. So, as a recovering professional, treatment professional, all I have to do is remember that I'm a drunk. And if I drink again, I like to tell people, you know, people will say to me, Gary, you know, how long has it been since you drank? I'll say, well, you know, it's a long time. They'll say, don't you ever want to take a drink when you're at a restaurant or at a party? I'll say, and this is true, I say this to people all the time, I honestly have no more thought about taking a drink when I'm at a bar than I do taking a sip out of the hose when they fill my car. It's true. It's going to probably have the same effect on me. It just has become one of those things that, you know, Gary, you got 6 months to live, you got cancer. I'm not going to drink for the last 6 months of my life after what I know now. Why would I do that? You know, why would I check out before my time? Because that's what it would be for me. There'd be nothing coherent about my last 6 months of drinking. I know that. I would be a mess for the last 6 months. And I'd want to suck you into my drama and feel sorry for me. And somebody bring therapy to the therapist because I'm coming unglued. That's where I'd go. So if I just remember that I just have to stay sober, do nice things for other people. I get extra credit if they don't know it was me that did it. That's what helps keep me sober, and that's what helps keep me focused about doing my job well and enjoying it. I'll swear to you, I've never been more satisfied in my life with a career, ever. And I may or may not be that good. I'm not implying that I'm that good at this, by the way. I just like it. I like it a lot. And I see people get better, and it makes me feel really good. So there's a selfish motive to it, I promise you that. I mean, I really get satisfaction and my own support and my own uplift from doing what I do. And if I have to make myself go home at night, I love what I do. And it's all because I'm a recovering therapist. Because first and foremost, the recovering part's what makes me who I am. If I'm any good at being a therapist, it's because of the recovery program. I am totally convinced of that. That if I am any better at it than anybody else, and they're not recovering, that's where my mind first goes, is that I got firsthand experience at this stuff. But it's not about better or worse. It's satisfying for me if I'm bringing value to other people. It's basically 12-stepping is what it is. It's a professional version of it, I suppose. And not everybody I deal with, it's not always 12-stepping, because not everybody I deal with has got addiction issues. I deal with lots of people that don't have any addiction or abuse issues. But I do. You know, I'm the alcoholic. And I just try so hard to stay right-sized with it. Anyway, where am I with time? I'm running out of stuff to say. I've been talking all day. Anybody have any questions? Anybody thinking anything about any of this?